This episode is brought to you by Harry's, which is a company started by two guys named Jeff and Andy who were tired of being overcharged for razors. Shaving the facial hair, it's a big deal for us gents. So I really applaud that move, and I applaud the product as well. I have always been really finicky when it comes to razors. So many of them give me razor burn on my neck right where I shape my beard. But not the razors from Harry's. It's a close shave, zero irritation. I'm a big fan of the German-engineered blades, the lubricating strip, the flex hinge for a really comfortable glide, and the trimmer blade for those hard-to-reach places. All this for $2 a blade. That's compared to the $4 or more that you'll typically pay at the drugstore. So I highly recommend Harry's, which is so confident that you will feel the same way I do, that they want you to try their most popular trial set for free. Comes with a razor handle of your choice, a 5-blade cartridge, and shaving gel. And it is all free when you sign up, and all you have to do is pay a small fee for shipping. So to redeem your free trial offer, go to harrys.com/backseat right now. Again, that is harrys.com/backseat.
The following program is a PodcastOne.com presentation.
The variety of passengers I meet driving Lyft never ceases to amaze me. In my 10 months as a driver, I've met people from all over the world, all different backgrounds, all different job categories, from CEOs and executives, all the way to minimum wage workers. And I've even driven drug addicts who need a ride just to feed their habit. And if you don't believe me on that last part, just listen to episode 8 of this podcast. Now, I'd guess that about 90% of the people I drive are American-born, most of them from Chicago or living in Chicago. And the remaining 10% are either first-generation immigrants or foreign tourists. In other words, people with foreign accents. I hear a lot of different accents coming from the backseat of my car. And some of their stories, from either overseas or from a foreign perspective, have really made me pause and see this country through a different lens. And quick analogy before we get to the passengers. In an episode a couple months ago where I reached out to a handful of backseat rider listeners, it's episode 9, we heard from a man who talked about the movie Dead Poets Society. It stars Robin Williams as this irreverent poetry teacher at a stuffy East Coast prep school. And the most famous scene in that movie, a lot of you have probably seen it, takes place in the classroom. And that is where he has all of his students stand up on top of their desks, and he tells them to look around at each other and at the classroom. And the whole point of that exercise is that the students, they're in the exact same place they've always been, but they're seeing it from a new vantage point. Standing on top of their desks, the classroom suddenly looks way different. So it's a totally new take on the same old classroom. And the three passengers that you're going to hear from in this episode, in a similar way, had that effect for me when it comes to how I see this country. And I'm sharing them this week with the hope that perhaps it'll do the same for you. It was one of those dreary, gray Chicago days. Not snowy, not overly cold, just kind of a forgettable winter day. And I got a ride request from the UIC Medical District, which is this cluster of hospitals on the near southwest side. So I pull up to the circle drive of one of the buildings, right in front of the lobby, and my passenger, she's a woman who looked to be in her late 40s, maybe early 50s, she approaches my car. And by the way she was dressed, she was obviously Muslim. Her clothes covered up everything except her face. And she was clearly in distress. I remember thinking, even though it was somewhat cold out that day, I run hot, so I never have the heat up all that high in the car. And she was still uncomfortably hot sitting in the back seat.
Sorry, I don't like warm too much.
Me neither.
You opened the heater?
Yeah, do you want me to? It's off.
Yeah, it's off. It's better.
Now, Being that I just picked her up from the hospital, I didn't want to be too aggressive in terms of questioning her. But in the course of conversation, before I hit the record button, she told me that the reason she was there was because her son, 22 years old, was in physical therapy. He's still trying to recover after being critically injured in an accident that had happened on a Chicago street last year.
What? Where did the accident happen?
Oh, they will know.
She wouldn't answer that basic question about the accident out of fear that someone listening might identify her. In fact, she wouldn't even offer up her nationality.
Yeah, where are you from?
I'm from Gulf.
Gulf? Yeah. Middle East?
Yeah. Yeah.
Which country?
One of the Gulf countries.
One of the Gulf countries.
Yeah. Okay. And, you know, if I don't have the money, I will not able to come here to treat my son.
Uh-huh.
And that's a bad thing. If my son, he is poor, he will not come here to have this treatment.
But she did go on to tell me some other basics about what happened. About a year ago, her son, who was an engineering student at a local college, was crossing the street on foot right outside where he goes to school when a drunk driver plowed right into him.
Did the accident happen in day or night?
In day.
Day?
Yeah. Yeah. He was in front of his college. Somebody crashed with him.
He was in front of his school? Oh, my gosh.
In front of his college, yeah. That bad man, he was drinking in the morning. Not in the night. And crashed with her.
She said the driver had been drinking even though the accident happened first thing in the morning.
No, my son, he was careful. And he was... He's a good boy.
And now, while her son did survive the accident, he still can't walk. And she's not positive he'll ever walk again.
I hope he walk again.
Her son hasn't been to school in a year. This crash, it completely derailed his life. So she's been living here in Chicago this whole time, taking care of him while he's in rehab. And I wasn't able to get too many details about the driver involved, except she did give me the impression there was a whole trial and he's now serving a prison sentence. And apparently the driver did show remorse at some point. Perhaps that happened in court. Although it was clear to me that didn't matter to her very much.
Did the person apologize?
Yeah.
And did the person face criminal charges?
Yeah.
Is the person in jail now?
Yeah, I think. What I do with if he is in jail, you know? It will not make my son back. And what I do with his sorry. And he was crying, you know?
Yeah, he felt remorse.
Yeah.
But that doesn't do anything for
no,
your son.
No.
How is your son doing right now?
It's okay. In the beginning it was worse, you know? He said, why I live like that, you know. Now, day by day, he's better.
How are his spirits?
Okay, with me, I make support for him.
Uh-huh. Is it just you and him?
Yeah. Yeah.
She says her son, he'd been thriving. As a student, he'd been embracing American culture and totally embracing his new life in Chicago.
He was fantastic in this country. He was American, American.
The bitterness in her voice there. She really made zero effort to hide her anger over what happened. Her son, wrong place at the wrong time, here to start a new career and start a new life, winds up right in the path of an out-of-control drunk driver.
And why somebody drank to lose his brain and to lose... It's conscious. So, I hate drinking here in USA.
So when she said that, going back to the movie analogy, this was my see the classroom from a brand new perspective moment. Because I thought to myself it had been a long time, if at all, that I'd ever stopped, took a step back, and considered for a minute just how ubiquitous alcohol is in this country.
What are your thoughts about the drinking culture in America?
It's bad for everybody. Why he must for the brain disappear when he drank. Why? We are Muslim, and our religion, it's not allowed to us to drink.
It's an important part.
Yeah.
Is that an important part of the religion?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No drinking, no alcohol, no drugs, nothing.
And does a situation like this only reaffirm to you that that's important?
Yeah. Yeah. I think our religion, it's good religion because from the beginning said, don't drink that thing, don't drink that thing, don't do that thing.
Did it surprise you when you got here? How many bars there are, how much alcohol there is everywhere.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And they wonder why. They can enjoy without drinking. There is a lot of things without drinking. Why somebody, he must be drunk to be happy?
After I dropped her off in Streeterville, which is one of the busiest neighborhoods downtown, my surroundings seemed different suddenly. It was subtle, but the difference was there. I kept driving, but it suddenly became impossible not to notice every bar I drove by, and every restaurant I passed by where I knew there was a bar inside, and every sign I saw advertising that thing, to use her words, that this mother hated so much. There was a sunny weekday morning that I hopped in the car, and the Lyft app was really slow. Normally, the better the weather, the fewer the ride requests. So I'd been sitting in the car for a while, and I finally got a ride request from a high-rise apartment in Edgewater. That's not far from the lakefront. And the passenger got in, young guy, really quiet, and based on his looks and his accent, I had zero indication where he was from. I just had no clue. But he did tell me that he had just finished up high school in Saudi Arabia.
What was it like going to high school in Saudi Arabia?
It's not like a high school you see here or elsewhere. It's different.
Turned out he's not from Saudi Arabia. He is from Eritrea, which is a nation in East Africa. But his dad had gotten a job in Saudi Arabia, so he was there with his father. And I was expecting him to say he was 18, like an American high school graduate. But this young man, he was 22 years old. And so I took the opportunity to ask him to describe for me some of the differences between America and Saudi Arabia.
Life is kind of hard over there.
How come?
Because there is a lot of rules based on their religion, you know. So.
Which is the one that affected you most?
Okay, so I'm a human being, right? I have boys' friends and I have girlfriends, right?
Yeah.
So I cannot walk with my girlfriends outside because it's not allowed. I'm only allowed to walk with my mom, with my sister, or with my wife, you know.
But so, you're not married?
I'm not married, no.
But people are only allowed to walk down the
yes,
street?
Yes, with their wives, sisters, or mothers. That's all.
Wow.
So that's kind of hard, you know.
So how do you maintain friendships with females, then?
You don't, actually.
Can you email
period.
Them?
You can do that. You can do that, but... I mean, for example, if you... You're not going to make friendship with a Saudi Arabian lady. But if you make a friendship and you start emailing her, and if her brother or father or someone else knows, you are in a big trouble, you know? They don't like that.
So you're just not allowed to, like, basically have relationships with women outside your family?
Yes, that's all.
And so, what is the effect of that on the culture?
I mean... I don't know, but that everything is based on the religion. So, women, like for example, even the Saudi Arabian women, if they want to go out shopping, most like I can say 99%, they have to go with someone, like a guy from their family.
Yeah.
So, women are from my point of view, I think like women in Saudi Arabia, they are in a prison, not like I can say that they are in a prison.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're a human being, and if you don't own your own life, if you don't, you know, what is the meaning of living in this world, right?
Did you get the impression that the women were happy over there?
I mean, some of them are happy, some of them are not. Mostly the young ones are not happy because, you know, they have, they watch movies. They know everything about outside their country, you know. So they're not happy about it, but they are Saudi Arabians, what they can do.
Were you able to become friends with any women or girls over there?
Actually, yeah, they're from my country.
And just to be clear, when he said they're from his country, he meant other Eritreans who were living in Saudi Arabia.
So I used to go to their house, I can only hang out with her in her house, nowhere else, you know.
And what would she tell you about her, like, dreams and desires?
To get out of the country.
To get out of the country?
Yeah, and she did. She went to Europe, Norway, and she's living there now.
When he said that, we had just pulled up to the restaurant where he works as a waiter. I was dropping him off at work that day, but I was obviously eager to hear more from him, and he was nice enough to give me the green light to ask him one more question.
What do you think the most important thing for American people is to know about what women face over there in Saudi Arabia?
I mean, okay, first of all, there has to be a freedom for everybody. Women has to be free, you know. They must be able to move freely and make friendship with whoever they want. And actually, women in Saudi Arabia, they don't drive. They're not allowed to drive. And they were not even allowed to work, but at least they are working now, in a specific kind of job. They have to have freedom. That's all I can say. If they have freedom, they can do a lot of things, like the other men.
What are the consequences if they walk with, like you or friends?
Oh, that's really bad, because everything, women and men, if they are in a relationship or in a friendship, they think you're doing like bad things. That's what they said, like you're gonna have sex with her, sex before marriage in their culture and in their religion is, you know, it's not a good thing. So it's really bad.
Did you ever see a woman get punished for something over there or disciplined?
Actually, I've never seen anyone getting punished, but I know someone who got in prison for 2 years for doing that.
What did they do?
He was walking with a woman after 8, and you know, the police was going around. They stopped them and they asked them for IDs. And she's not his wife, she's his girlfriend. So they arrest him.
What happened to her?
They didn't do anything to her. They just told her just to go home, and that's all.
Wow.
It's pretty tough over there. You gotta watch out every step you go, you know.
So it was scary being over
yeah,
there.
Yeah. Even for guys, for example, when I was there, my hair was like this big, okay? I like afro hair. It was like this big.
So, and right there, he made a gesture to me to show me that his hair was really big at the time, like a foot and a half in diameter.
So one day I was walking, and they pray 5 times in a day. So when they pray, every shop is going to close, like everything is closed at that time when they pray. So I was walking by the mosque. I was just, you know, jogging. So there is actually a religious police. That's what they call them. They monitor things like outside. You know? So this guy, he stabbed me, and then he told me like, what kind of hair is that? You gotta cut it, you know. He told me that, what is this? You know, you're a man. You have to keep your hair down. And I told him, like, this is what I want. This is how I want to look. I'm not doing anything bad. I'm not doing anything bad on the street. I'm jogging, I'm running. I didn't offend anyone. I didn't say anything. So, the way I look, it's me. This is how I want to look, you know. And then he said, no, you're living in Saudi Arabia, so you have to obey the rule. You have to cut your hair. I told him, like, I can't cut my hair. This is what I look. This is always what I look. This is how I want to look, you know. And actually, I was speaking to him in English, so he was kind of, you know, he didn't think that I'm, like, from Africa or somewhere else. He thinks, like, I was from, you know, I don't know, from somewhere else. So he said, he didn't say anything. But to my friend that I know, who barely speaks English, he speaks Arabic fluently, but he speaks a very little English. He cut his hair by himself. The guy.
Right there?
Yeah.
Right then and there?
Yeah. He just did it, like, from the bottom.
He had a pair of scissors on him?
Yes. Because they have the cars. So there is one police officer here, and there is one religious leader or something. Two guys here sitting. So the police is the one who drives them, and they go around. Even if you, like, when they pray, if you don't close your shop, they come inside and they give you penalty or they give you warning or something.
Wow.
So imagine for a moment living in a place where not only can you not have the hairstyle you want, but if you're caught with it, a religious police officer can approach you on the street and cut it down to specification. And hearing that, it was hard not to think, for all of America's faults, at least it's not like that.
Thank you for sharing. I'll let you get to work.
All right, man. Take
care. Am I able to take a picture with you?
Yeah.
All right, cool.
And if you're curious to see that shot of the two of us, I have posted it to social media. On Facebook, I'm at Anthony Ponce, P-O-N-C-E, and my Instagram is Anthony Ponce TV. You will find it in both of those places. But again, that was another story that sort of changed the filter I see this country through. Even just looking around, out the car windows, noticing women and men on the street with countless different hairstyles. I have one more international to introduce you to this week, who tells the story of being thrown in jail by the government in his home country.
How long were you incarcerated?
Like
before,
3 days.
Before they let you go? 3 days?
Yes.
And he will explain the very unusual circumstances that led to that episode in just a moment. But first, I want to tell you about one of the sponsors that is making it possible for me to bring you this podcast for free each week. And that is TrueCar. And TrueCar is a service that, if you're in the market to buy a car, will show you what other people paid for the same car that you are looking for. And that is arguably the most important piece of information that you can take with you into a dealership. You want to have the most realistic upfront pricing info available, and TrueCar gives you just that. Now, I used TrueCar when I bought my most recent car, which was brand new. But one thing a lot of people don't realize is you can also use TrueCar to buy a used car. In fact, there are over 700,000 pre-owned vehicles available from TrueCar certified dealers nationwide. Again, you will see what other people paid for the same car you want, so you can know what a fair price is. Also, get this. TrueCar users save on average $3,000 off MSRP. So when you're ready to buy a new or a used car, visit TrueCar to enjoy a more confident car buying experience. Some features not available in all states.
Hey guys, David Smalley here, reminding you to check out Dogma Debate on the Podcast One app, iTunes, and basically everywhere else you could possibly hear a podcast. Dogma Debate is basically a way for you to peek in on conversations you've always wondered about. Say a hardcore anti-gay preacher meets an atheist who knows the Bible like the back of his hand, or a far-left social justice warrior meets a different kind of liberal who doesn't want to join in on the riots. On Dogma Debate, I talk to people who completely disagree with me, and I let them tell me why they think I'm wrong, why I should be on their team, and why they take such an extreme stance. And sometimes you'll just hear me hanging out with like-minded people and laughing during segments like Republicans Say the Darndest Things or Fact Check Yo Mama. It all happens on Dogma Debate, right here on Podcast One.
The last passenger I want to introduce you to this week comes from Venezuela. And for anyone not aware of the economic situation in that country right now, here's a fact that puts in perspective just how bad it's got. According to a recent national survey, right now, a third of the Venezuelan population is skipping meals each day because they can't afford as much food as they used to.
Right now, I have friends that they're eating only Wednesday. Because
they're what, only Wednesday?
Eating once a day. Because the minimum wage is like $100. No. Like $50. So they have to spend like $100 to live, to buy food and stuff. So it's under what they need to live.
So they can only eat once a day.
Most of the Venezuelan people right now are eating once a day only. Yeah.
Wow.
This man is 28 years old. He works as a web designer and a photographer. And he was in Chicago on kind of an extended trip here to the U.S. And in the car, we got to talking about the Venezuelan economy, which has been getting worse and worse ever since 2014. And that is the year when the price of oil just started plunging. That's the country's main export. So it was a really bad situation for Venezuela. And the government, on top of that, didn't exactly have a backup plan to support the economy.
I mean, we used to be the richest country in America, Venezuela. In the decade of 50, like 1950, there was a point that the Bolivar was above the dollar. You know, our money was above the dollar. Mm-hmm. And because we are on, we live from the oil, yes? Mm-hmm. So we are like Dubai at that time, you know? Mm-hmm. And because of the bad decision of our government in the last 20 years, no, in the last 15 years, I think, since Chavez got into power, every bad decision, it was getting worse and worse and worse. So we are used to live, you know, well. Now, from one day to another, like in the last 2 years, we have been through so much things economically and socially that our lives have been like messed up, like from one day to another.
He comes from a family that in a former life was pretty well to do. His parents are actually both doctors. But at the time of my ride with him, he said his folks were actually considering trying to relocate to Colombia because the value of Venezuelan currency has gotten so low that even they are having trouble making ends meet.
And my parents, they are both doctors. Mm-hmm. And they are thinking about going to Colombia to work because the money is not enough. Everything is so expensive that they're thinking moving to Colombia right now.
Dire situation, even for members of the upper class there. So I want to rewind back to the year 2014, because that is the year that citizens started demonstrating, protesting the government's handling of the situation. Now, I mentioned that my passenger is a photographer. So what he decided to do during one of those demonstrations was post up in the second floor window of a nearby building, take pictures, and his plan was to try to sell those images to a number of foreign news outlets. That turned out to be a very bad idea. And here he is explaining why.
She was like, you can take pictures and you can sell them to CNN or whatever. So I can give you the contact. And I was like, okay, that's a good idea. So the first day that I went out to take pictures of that, there was like a lot of trouble, and I was in a second floor taking pictures of the guards taking the things from the house, like the TV, the computers, and stuff. So I was taking pictures of that, the guards. And somehow they realized that I was taking pictures. So they came into the house that I was in. They broke in the house. They, I don't know, there's some kind of shooting machine that it shoots like pepper gas.
Yeah.
So they shoot that in the eye, like
in your eye? Near.
Not to me, to a friend. It was with me. So he was like bleeding all over. So I took him and I went inside because the hospital was like one block away. And when I was walking there, they came to me and they arrested me. So they robbed my camera and they robbed my cell phone. And they took me to Yale for a couple days, and they were giving me charge of things that I never did. Like I tried to kill a guard, that I was a terrorist and whatever. And can you imagine that? They were gonna give me 10 years of jail.
How did Oh my gosh, how did you get out of it?
Well, it was almost impossible for me. So let's say, like, I'm a believer. I believe in God. So my dad is a pastor, so he talked with many people.
Your dad's a pastor and a doctor?
Yeah.
Wow.
So he talked with many people and, like, asking them to pray. So when I was in court, the judge was like, he was going to give us 10 years of jail. That was sure. And outside, there were like 200 people screaming because we were like 20. It was not only me. It was like 20 different people that they arrest.
And people were protesting outside the courtroom?
Outside the courtroom.
For you?
For us. We're like 20. So the judge, he was speaking, but it was too loud for him to speak. So he stopped the judge and he said, like, we're going to make a stop until they stop screaming to continue. And when he stopped the procedure, he received a call. I don't know who in the world called him. But after that call, he changed his attitude. And then he returns to the court. And he was like, he had another attitude. Different. Like, my idea, what I think is that somebody of the people that were there, like one of the 20, because we were 20 people, had somebody in the high government that called this judge. I don't know. That's my theory. I don't know. The thing is that he was like, we don't have any proof, because they didn't have proof at all. They didn't have any proof. Mm-hmm. So he was like, we don't have any proof, so you're going to be under investigation for the next year. So you have to still come into court every month and stuff, so you're free to go.
How long were you incarcerated?
Like before they let you go?
3 days?
Yes.
Jailed by federal guards for taking pictures of a protest that happened in public. Now, he wasn't seriously hurt by the guards, but he was roughed up. And he says others in his group got it a lot worse.
And they kick us. I have a friend that was with me, that it broke his tooth and a bone. And they were like, we were sleeping in the floor. And it was horrible, you know? It was a horrible experience. But thanks God that happened, that they let us out.
They eventually let him out. But to this day, he still feels the fallout of that whole ordeal.
I still on investigation there.
You are technically still under investigation?
Yes. Because I'm like an enemy of the state. So they look all my calls. It's almost impossible for me to live there. That's why, I mean, thanks God I travel, you know.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, was it difficult to come here for the month? Was it difficult for you to get a ticket?
Sometimes they stop me in the airport and they say, like, what was your problem in 2014? And so they retain me like for 10 minutes sometime, or maybe an hour.
At the airport?
Yes. It happens to me like many times. Because for them, the enemy for them is like, I was doing like a journalist work, you know?
Yeah.
So for them, like, to tell the truth of what is happening there is very bad to them, you know?
Right.
Because they don't want to know. They don't want the world to know what's happening there.
So from my point of view, not just as a citizen, but as a journalist as well, this was, again, an anecdote that made me think to myself, as much as certain parties have tried to discredit certain media outlets in this country, as far as I know, no reporters have been physically beaten or locked up like this guy says he was. At least not yet.
And everybody was like, get out of the country, don't be there. And yeah, because it was almost impossible for me to survive that.
All right, we are about to wrap up for the week, but as promised last week, we are about to hit the phone line to hear from a couple listeners, just like you. And these two called in with an answer to a very specific question that I posed a couple weeks ago. If you'll recall, I did a whole episode devoted to the good, the bad, and the ugly of social media and how it's kind of warping real life, not always in a good way. And I asked people to call in who have successfully taken a hiatus from all social media and tell us how it's impacted their life. And I got lots of calls with lots of success stories. So here are a couple highlights.
Hey, Anthony. I am from small town Indiana. My name is Chris. I was just listening to your podcast, and it was talking about taking a hiatus on social media. Short story is divorced and things got ugly back and forth, got tired of being able to see what the ex-wife had put on the Facebook about me, you know, just kind of got over the whole ordeal. Deleted Facebook, don't have any social media at all. I have been without Facebook for about 5 years now. I have to say it has been one of the greatest moves I have ever made in my life. I'm not caught up in all of the junk that goes on into Facebook or any of that stuff. It has just absolutely been spectacular. I personally believe that the original intent of Facebook is awesome and great, but we as people, we abuse it, and we don't use it for what it's made for. With that being said, I've never been happier in my life to not have to look at Facebook again, so I don't miss it one bit. It's not been hard to do by any means. Yeah, all my friends, they talk, you know, hey, you need to get back on Facebook, you need to do this, you need to look at that. And they'll be like, did you see that video on Facebook? And I was like, oh, did I forget to tell you that still don't have Facebook? So it's kind of nice. It's kind of good. So yeah, it's a little bit strange. People look at you with a weird look when you tell them you don't have Facebook, but they've looked at me weird before. So I'm not really worried about all of that. It's great.
Hi, Anthony. My name is Kristen. I wanted to tell you I love your podcast. I recently rode Lyft for the first time doing some business travel, and I told all my drivers about it, so hopefully they will check it out. I work from home, so I love listening to podcasts during the day to keep me company. The reason for my call was to provide some insight from me on your social media podcast. So I am in my mid-30s. Facebook, you know, was popular as I was getting out of college, and I have Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat, and I deleted my Facebook about, oh gosh, 5 or 6 years ago. And honestly, the moment I deleted it, I felt like a huge weight lifted off my shoulders. My reason for deleting it was everyone that posted stuff on there was people that I hadn't talked to in years, and I had no intentions of keeping in touch with them. They just annoyed me. So, you know, I said, why am I doing this? I'm just getting annoyed. And I ended up deleting it, and I have never looked back, and it's been a solid 5 years. One of my good girlfriends just deleted hers as well based on my positive experience. You know, I had Twitter, and I deleted that off my phone a month or so ago because I just could not handle it with the politics anymore. It was causing me great stress and anxiety, so I just said, I do not need this. I, you know, have a few subscriptions. I watch the news. I will get my news that way. and I don't miss it either. And honestly, I have been so much happier and less stressed since I deleted Twitter.
Yep. So if you're on the fence or you've considered going on a social media hiatus, those are two pretty convincing cases for doing just that. And I should point out to Kristen and Chris and everyone else who's been able to take a hiatus, I am highly envious of that. I wish I could do the same. Unfortunately, when you're trying to launch your own podcast and you don't exactly have a major marketing budget, not the best idea. So I will have to live vicariously through all of you. And thank you to everyone who has called in. And this week, I'm going to put another question out there for people to answer with regard to this week's episode. Have you ever had an experience overseas or in another country that made you see America in a different light? If so, what was that experience? What country were you in? And how did it change your view of this country? So I'd love to hear from you. And the number is 312-709-4667. Again, that is 312-709-4667. Before I go, Lyft is not a sponsor of the show, has nothing to do with my content, but like other Lyft drivers, I get a promo code for any new users of the Lyft app. If you use my code, you will get up to $50 in free ride credit, and you would be doing me a huge favor as well. The code is really easy to remember. It's just the name of this podcast, Backseat Rider, all one word. You just put that into the payment tab when you sign up for Lyft, and you take your first ride. The code, again, is Backseat Rider. And again, if you want to do the free trial of Harry's Razors, just go to harrys.com/backseat. And I have put all this information for you in the show notes. This podcast is edited by Bob Gilmartin and produced by me with the help of Louis Kazmarek. And a special thanks to WTTW Chicago and WTTW.com for their support of Backseat Rider. And thank you to everyone who has sponsored me in Dancing with Chicago Celebrities. Thanks to you, I made it past my fundraising goal, so I cannot thank you enough. Really appreciate everybody who donated to such an important cause. And as always, look for new episodes of Backseat Rider every Wednesday on podcastone.com, the Podcast One app, or subscribe on iTunes, where I would appreciate you leaving a rating and a review if you haven't done that already. All right, that's it for me. See everybody next week.